It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jean Purcell, in today for Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up later, we'll find out why the UW's football coach won't be coming back next season and who could be in line to replace him.
First, according to a new report released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, about 8% of Americans are suffering from depression. That's about 1 in 13.
The study also found that the vast majority of those Americans aren't getting treatment or help from a mental health professional. So why is that, and what needs to be done to connect people with depression to the help that they need? Here to talk with us about the roadblocks to treatment and the resources available here in the state is Annabelle Potvin. She's the advocacy coordinator at the National Alliance of the Mental for the Mentally Ill in Wisconsin. Annabelle, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, the report finds that 1 in 13 Americans is suffering from depression at some point between 2009 and 2012. That's about 8% of all Americans. What is your reaction to that number?
Well, you know, of course, on just, you know, a basic human level, it's incredibly disheartening to know that such a high percentage of people in our communities are suffering from depression. And, you know, my understanding is that the projected percentage of people who suffer with depression has kind of hovered within that 5 to 8% range for some time. So it's really disheartening to me that it isn't lower. And then, you know, in looking at that number, it's important to remember that these numbers are self-reported. So people who aren't willing to disclose that they're dealing with depression probably aren't going to be captured in the data. So in reality, that percentage might even be higher. So it's really a disheartening figure.
What do we know about who's the most likely to be depressed?
And that's something that the study really points out. Women are actually more likely to be depressed than men at any age throughout the lifespan.
And anyone else? Are there any particular age groups that we're looking at here? Or is women the main headline?
Women is really the main headline of this report. And in terms of why that is, you know, researchers really haven't pinpointed one specific cause, but they think it's probably a combination of factors, as most things are. And some of that could be, you know, women have unique experiences that are associated with depression. So, you know, for example, having a child poses a risk of postpartum depression. Women are much more likely to experience domestic abuse and other types of interpersonal violence. And those types of trauma are definitely related to depression. And then women also experience, you know, high levels of stress in trying to balance home and work life. And then, you know, also there's the idea that women are more likely to seek help for depression and to report their struggles, to report that they have, you know, they're facing a mental health challenge. So there's the possibility that the research, you know, potentially overrepresents women.
So one of the most startling things about this report is that the majority of people who are struggling with depression are not seeking help for it. Only about 35% of people with severe depression are, and 20% of those with moderate depression said they'd gone to get help. And every situation, as you said, is different. But what do you think could explain those numbers of people not getting the help that they need?
Yeah. Well, you know, first of all, I would point out that in previous studies over the past decade or so, they've showed that about 50% of people who were struggling with depression didn't receive treatment at all. So it's something of a positive here that those percentages are lower. So I just wanted to point that out. But in terms of why people don't seek help, you know, I would say that stigma is still a huge reason. Our society still has so many negative stereotypes, inaccurate stereotypes about people with depression and all types of mental illness. And that stigma happens on a lot of levels. You know, while there's kind of that overarching negative assumptions in our society about people with mental illness, there's also self-stigma. You know, when we struggle with these issues, we make all kinds of assumptions about ourselves, influenced by that broader kind of cultural narrative. And, you know, whether that's, you know, I'm weak, I should be able to get over this depression, I don't want to be one of those people that's depressed, that internalized stigma has a huge impact on whether or not people seek help. But apart from stigma, you know, another big reason that I see that prevents people from seeking care are major misconceptions about what mental health services really are. What does it really mean to be in treatment? You know, we talk about seeking help or getting treatment for depression or any type of mental illness. And there tends to be an assumption that treatment is kind of this one-dimensional or one-size-fits-all idea, and it's really not. You know, for example, I talked with a woman last week who was telling me that she's been dealing with depression for a couple of years, I think almost 5 years, and she's been in treatment all of this time, but still wasn't seeing any improvements, and she was so frustrated. But then when I asked her what type of treatment she was utilizing, she said that she was seeing a psychiatrist who she liked very much, and he prescribed medication. So she hadn't been, you know, seeing a therapist or exploring other types of support, and no one had really educated her about other options.
How treatable is depression?
Depression is very, very treatable. You know, there are different forms of depression. That's something to keep in mind. So, you know, obviously the types of treatment that people explore is going to be different depending on the particular type of depression that they have. But it's very treatable. There are many, many very effective interventions that we have to treat depression.
In terms of the cost, is that something that you see as a possible factor standing in the way of people getting the treatment that they need, that they don't think that they can afford to pay for it?
Yes, absolutely. And that's a major barrier in Wisconsin. You know, in our state, we have a county-based mental health system. And so what that means is that a large portion of the funding that counties have to offer for mental health services is based on that county's tax levy. And so if it's a relatively, you know, small population or not an economy of scale, and the county maybe doesn't prioritize mental health care as much, then the people living in that county really have fewer options than someone who may live in a more urban or populous area. So, you know, trying to find help with depression in Bayfield County is going to look really different than trying to find help in Dane County. So across the state of Wisconsin, we definitely have a patchwork of what's available, and that has a huge impact on whether or not people are able to access effective care.
Are there other roadblocks that you think we should be looking at as a society that we could help address in getting that number of people not seeking treatment to go down?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I would really point out a huge roadblock is that the system is really confusing. You know, a lot of people have trouble understanding what types of mental health services are available to them, even if they do have health coverage. You know, people have very fixed assumptions about what they're going to experience and how long it's going to take. You know, I talk with people all the time who will go to one counseling session and say, oh, well, that didn't work. You know, so they're kind of writing off an entire therapeutic option after just 50 minutes. But when in reality, there are so many factors that influence the success of therapy, and that's, of course, only one modality. But, you know, some factors could be, is there a good connection with the therapist? Does the person in therapy understand what's going on? Do they understand the goals and the processes of therapy? And do they really understand that therapy isn't a quick fix where things are going to get significantly better after only one session? Do they know that they have other approaches? So I think there's a lot of misinformation about what it means to seek treatment. And even when people do have access in terms of health insurance or health coverage, just taking that initial step to get connected to services is so confusing and so overwhelming. So I think that's a huge roadblock.
We're talking right now with Annabelle Potvin about why people don't seek treatment for depression and the resources available for those in the state who do need help. We'll get to more of that in a bit. You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234.
If you struggled with depression, did you seek help or not? What kinds of resources work best for you, and what advice do you have for others? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234, or you can post a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll get back to that conversation in just a moment, but first, this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Membership Drive.
Indeed it is. I'm Gene Purcell here with Cheryl Gasser, and we are here as part of our year-end membership drive asking you to make your donation to support Wisconsin Public Radio. As you know, 2014, it feels like it just started, but it's almost over, so if you put off donating to WPR in 2014, now is the time do take action. And if you've given, or if you're a sustaining member, now's the time to make a special year-end gift. It'll take just a few minutes at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Gene, last hour we heard from 16 new and returning members to Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you so much for those pledges of support.
Absolutely. And right now we've got another great opportunity for you. A dollar-for-dollar match is in effect right now, up to $1,300 this hour. So let's get going. This generous match comes to us from a pair of anonymous donors from Middleton. And what it means is that they will match every dollar that you give. So if you give $100, they're going to kick another $100 in to help support programming here at Wisconsin Public Radio. It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio.
And when you pledge, you'll be entered to win two tickets to go on a WPR trip in the new year. Donate any amount during our year-end membership drive, and you could be touring Washington, D.C., experiencing the rich culture and delicious food of France, or seeing Alaska's beautiful scenery.
So get your pledge doubled right now. It really is a great opportunity at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You might wonder what your pledge actually pays for. Well, we have toll-free numbers, so you can call in your questions. When we do our talk shows, we rely on newspapers, magazine subscriptions, internet services so that we can research all the topics of the day. And all of these things and so many more of them have costs. And that is what your pledge helps to pay for. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And as a bonus, during this membership drive, you can get the limited edition 2015 WPR calendar when you make a contribution of $120. That's $10 a month or more. It's your donation that supports the programs you count on, and you can get this great, fun, useful thank you gift.
Make WPR part of your daily routine in a whole new way when you ask for this very cool calendar of historic WPR photos and get your pledge doubled. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This membership drive, we're having a drawing for a trip of your choice to D.C., France, or Alaska. When you give, you're automatically entered. You don't have to pledge to participate. You can send a postcard with your name, address, email, and phone number to WPR Trip Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Enter by sending a postcard, or better yet, by making a pledge right now.
You can go to WPR.org to make your pledge or give us a call at 888-202-2552. I'm Gene Purcell, back with Cheryl Gasser, asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is your gift of $10 or $15 a month. Pick the amount you want because that is the right amount.
And remember, we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now, up to $1,300 from anonymous donors in Middleton. So you definitely want to become a member. Increase your contribution, renew your membership. Now would be a great time to hear from you. And a great way to support WPR is by becoming a sustaining member, because as a sustainer, you'll make ongoing monthly donations right from your bank account or your credit card.
And as a sustaining member myself, I can tell you that many people give $10 or $15 a month, but the important thing is that you choose the amount that works for you. It works for your budget and what you feel Wisconsin Public Radio is worth for you. So become a sustaining member right now, WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Think about the time that you spend listening to WPR in the car. Weekdays, you get news and issues, and weekends, you get laughs and music.
That's right. You make great use of your time when you listen in the car. You get where you're going, and you also get information and inspiration. Your life is enriched. Your time is enjoyable every time you get behind the wheel.
And your gift helps make the quality time you spend in the car with us or anywhere, at home, in the office, possible at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you've been listening for a while without making a pledge, now is the time to do so. A lot of folks listen for 3, 4, 5 years, even longer, before they make their first pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. So take that step right now from becoming a listener of Wisconsin Public Radio to becoming an active financial supporter, and make that pledge of support at WPR.org or call us 888-202-2552. And thanks.
We're talking with Annabelle Potvin about new numbers on depression in America. A CDC survey finds that about 8% of Americans are depressed and that the majority of depression sufferers aren't getting the help and treatment that they need. We're trying to get to the bottom of that, and you can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Annabelle, in terms of where people can turn in Wisconsin, people who are dealing with this, who are suffering from depression and hasn't gotten treatment yet, what are some good, safe options?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, Wisconsin has a county-based mental health system. So if you have, public insurance or you're uninsured, your county human services agency is probably the best place to start. And then if you have private insurance, you can just call your plan and ask for a referral to a mental health professional. So those are some really broad starting points. But ultimately, you know, it really depends on the resources that you have and your location. Each person's options are pretty unique. But to start that process, because it can be, like I said, really overwhelming and confusing, you can always reach out to organizations like NAMI, where I work, to help you understand where to start. I think that people who don't deal with mental health challenges tend to think that reaching out for help is a, you know, pretty simple process, and they don't necessarily understand why people hesitate for so long or struggle so much. But really, you know, not even thinking about navigating the system and the bureaucracy, it can be really difficult even just from an emotional perspective, really stressful and difficult to make that first phone call. So I would really recommend reaching out to an organization like NAMI. There are many others, and if you go to, you know, our website, which is just namiwisconsin.org, there's tons of information about how to start that process.
Great. Well, let's go to our phones now. We've got Sabrina joining us from Appleton. Hi, Sabrina.
Hi.
Hi, what is your
how
story?
Are you?
I'm well, thanks. What would you like to share?
I just turned in on this, and this really resonated with me. I have been diagnosed with clinical depression for about 13 years. My mother also has bipolar disorder, and what I really want to say to people out there, especially men, there seems to be a bigger stigma with the male population, as was said, because it's somehow seen as some kind of weakness. And what helped me grasp it and erased a lot of the stigma for me was likening it to a medical illness. So let's say you have diabetes. Your pancreas can't produce insulin. No matter how hard you try, you cannot will your pancreas to produce more insulin. Therefore, you need blood sugar monitoring. You need to meet with a doctor. Sometimes you need to take medication. And if you are taking care of your pancreas that way, that's the same approach that you need to take with your mental health, because to me it's almost as important, if not more important, of a foundation than physical health, because it kind of determines how you're going to take care of yourself in the future.
Great, Sabrina. Thank you so much for sharing that. And Sabrina's analogy is that it's like something else that may go wrong with your body, a disease that needs treatment, and it should be treated not as any different with any more sort of stigma as any other sort of illness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's such a helpful way of thinking about it, and she really phrased it absolutely perfectly. You know, we tend to have, you know, we think about mental illness in a completely different way than we think about physical illnesses, when really people don't have, you know, complete control over their emotions and over their mental health. And so it's a really problematic stereotype that people can just, you know, snap out of it or get over it, especially when it comes to depression. I think that's something we see. And, you know, that stigma also really, really impacts the type of support that family members are able to get. You know, if we have a loved one that we see is really struggling with depression or any type of mental illness, we often don't know where to turn for support. You know, with so many physical illnesses, if someone breaks a bone or has a heart attack or gets cancer, our friends, our churches, communities, you know, really rally around us, you know, bring casseroles, you know, do whatever they can to support us. But with mental illness, people don't experience that same type of support. There's a lot of secrecy and shame still around it, which is very unfortunate.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Sabrina. Good luck to you. And let's move on to Stacy in Pickerel. Hi, Stacy.
Hi. I have been diagnosed with chronic depression with anxiety. And I have been struggling probably all my life, but back, you know, when I was younger, I decided to self-medicate instead. And these days, I've been trying to get treatment along with the medication. And I say treatment meaning counseling, seeing a psychiatrist, psychologist, you know. But what my problem is that nobody can afford it, because even if the insurance covers it, you have to meet your deductible first. And that's, everybody's on a high deductible, and it's $4,000 I can't come up with. You know, it would be, and I know for a fact that it would be helpful if I could go and talk to somebody.
Okay, well, thank you, Stacy. Appreciate you sharing that with us. And Stacy highlighting some of the financial challenges that people can face. They might be able to afford part of the treatment, but not all of it. How does someone handle a situation like that where they feel like they can't get the complete package of the help that they need?
Yeah, she brings up such an excellent point. I mean, even with, you know, with the Affordable Care Act, we saw some improvements where people were getting access to coverage, you know, affordable premiums. But then even in those cases, they have a really high deductible, and so that makes it really challenging. You know, alternatives to getting counseling through your health plan is to get counseling on a sliding scale. So a lot of mental health providers will offer services on a sliding scale, which basically just means that they will kind of tie the cost of their service to the person's income. So for that caller, I would really urge her to call NAMI Wisconsin and talk with me and see if we can find any options for her.
Annabelle, I'm sorry, but we're out of time. I wish we could go longer, but it's been wonderful having you on to talk about this today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been speaking with Annabelle Potvin, Advocacy Coordinator at NAMI, the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill here in Wisconsin.
Coming up next, we'll catch up on the head coaching saga at UW-Madison and find out what's ahead for the football team.
Right now, don't forget, this is the Wisconsin Public Radio year-end membership drive. Your pledge really does make a difference. It has a direct impact on the programming you hear every day on the radio, the programming that you count on that's a part of your life. So support the programming that you listen to at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, we've got that dollar-for-dollar match in effect during this hour. Your opportunity to double your pledge, double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio. Make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Big news out of the University of Wisconsin football program this week. Head coach Gary Anderson is moving on after 2 years of coaching the Badgers. He's leaving for a head coaching position at Oregon State.
The announcement comes days after a 59-0 shellacking at the hands of the Ohio State Buckeyes and about 3 weeks before the Badgers take on the Auburn Tigers in the Outback Bowl. If you're feeling a bit of deja vu, it's probably because the Badgers were in a similar situation 2 years ago when then-head coach Brett Bielema left for greener pastures. So, where do the Badgers go from here?
Joining us now to talk some Badger football is Tim Scott. He is with WIBA in Madison, and he hosts the post-game radio show for the Wisconsin Badger Football Network. Tim, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Gene. No problem.
I want to go back 24 hours because it's been just that long since we heard the news about Gary Anderson. You've had the benefit of about 24 hours of thinking about it now. Were you surprised then? Are you surprised now?
I think that the word I'll use is stunned. No one saw this coming at all. Completely from left field. I mean, obviously, when the story broke yesterday, we were in shock and disbelief as to this because, you know, in Brett's case, to be honest, it didn't really surprise me per se because of the fact that, you know, he'd been to three straight Rose Bowls, or he had guided a team to two straight Rose Bowls, had taken a third there. Obviously, he didn't finish up coaching that game. But with Gary, I mean, he was 2 years in. And to go to Oregon State, it almost in a sense is someone consider this a backwards move. Most people are considering this a step down, not a step up.
And so in the last 24 hours, I've had the opportunity to be around a lot of water coolers, and I can tell you that this is a topic of much conversation. And, you know, I don't want to say conspiracy theories, but everybody's got a theory about why Gary Anderson is leaving. Run down some of the theories that you have heard, and how do we start separating fact from fiction here?
Well, some of the more absurd theories that are out there, which are without merit. You know, those theories that said that, you know, he wasn't focused and that's why Wisconsin lost as badly as they did in the Big Ten title game, or to the fact that, you know, he worked for Urban Meyer at Utah and that, you know, he was helping out his old boss by maybe not coaching the team up the best he could. Listen, the assistant coaches, for the most part, prepare these guys for these games. And Wisconsin went into that Big Ten game, truth be told, Gene, very beat up. I mean, this was a team that the offensive line was a very beat up bunch. Melvin Gordon had some nicks. They all did. If you go back and look at their run to that game, I mean, of course, they start with Nebraska. They're down 17-3. They rally at home to win that game. Then you go to Iowa, always a tough place to play. It was a brutal, hard-fought football game. Wisconsin survives there. And then you come home from Minnesota. It's senior day, the act, the controversy about, you know, should we rush the sidelines, that type of stuff that all came from what happened last year in Minneapolis. And they're down 17-3 in that game, too. And they came all the way back, and they won. I think you had a team that had gone through a brutal stretch and quite simply was out of gas by the time they got into Indianapolis to take on that game. I think really, and again, we'll hear tomorrow, Gary Anderson will meet the media in Corvallis at 3:30 tomorrow. I think really what it boiled down is two things. I think, one, there's some truth to family. I don't know if his family ever really settled in and embraced Madison. I mean, Gary's entire coaching tenure outside of a stint in Northern Arizona was in Utah. I mean, this was a big jump for him. And we all know people in other lines of work that have taken jobs and moved their families. And, you know, for whatever reason, it just wasn't the right fit for them. They thought it was at the time, but it was not. I think that's part of it. The other part of it, too, is I think he looked at what happened with Ohio State and what Urban Meyer is able to do there, from getting players into the university, the academic standards. I think he knew that that would never change at Wisconsin. I think he took a hard look at it and said, okay, if I can't get five players in, or whatever that number might be, by just loosening up the academic standards a little bit, I don't know if we'll ever be able to compete with Ohio State and the Michigans and the other powers that are in the Big Ten. It's hard to say when you look at Wisconsin's success, but I think those two things, more than anything else, are the reason why Gary Anderson left for the Oregon State job.
So I guess the big question then is, where does this leave Badger football? Because you 2 years here, you know, Barry Alvarez is talking a good game. We've got the phones ringing off the hook. But they're going to have to be candidates who are going to be taking a look at that and just taking a step back and wondering what's going on.
But it's interesting about the academic requirements. Wisconsin and Illinois are the only Big Ten schools that have a certain level that all student-athletes have to make to meet, or they can't compete or enroll at the University of Wisconsin. And, you know, Bo Ryan is affected by that. Every coach at Wisconsin is affected by that in every sport. So, but I honestly, Gene, don't think that will ever change. I think what it will take is someone who has ties, someone who has either been here before, someone who is at a school previously that has stringent academic requirements. I mean, let's be honest. You look out west at what Jim Harbaugh did at Stanford. I mean, Stanford, as we know, one of the greatest academic institutions in all of college, in all of college athletics, if you want to phrase it that way. And look what he was able to do out there. I mean, Barry Alvarez proved you can win here. Brett Bielema proved you can win here. And in two short years, you can say, well, he carried on with Brett's players. Maybe so. But the program didn't step back. I mean, if anything, it maintained. And this program, if you look at history in the last 20 years, has more bowl appearances, more Big Ten championships than Ohio State and Michigan. And so whomever steps into this position, they're not inheriting a program they have to take over that needs a lot of work. Maintain it and go out and find those student athletes. You know going in what the requirements are going to be. You know, find that guy that Barry likes to say is the right fit.
And in the short term, we've got the Outback Bowl coming up. Looks like Barry Alvarez is going to be the interim head coach again. Any predictions for that game? What's shaping up?
Well, Auburn is a really, really good football team, Gene. It'll be interesting to see what does happen. You know, you have in Melvin Gordon's case, you know, here's a guy that's going to the NFL. You know, I'm really hesitant to say that I expect good things in this football game. And based upon past history, we saw what happened with Wisconsin and Coach Alvarez in the Rose Bowl, you know, 2 years ago. Gave it a valiant effort, but they came up short. Auburn's a really, really good football team. Remember, this was a team at one point in this season that was, they were talking heavily about being in the end of the, in one of those playoff spots at the end of the year. I think, you know, the assistant coaches will coach him up. I think Coach will be there. He'll oversee things. But also at the same time, remember, he's trying to find a replacement. So Badger fans enjoy the weather. I'll just leave it at that.
Fair enough. Well, Tim, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Gene, for having me.
We've been talking with Badgers football postgame show host Tim Scott from WIBA Radio with a look at what's next for Wisconsin football after the departure of head coach Gary Anderson.
Now it's time for the Wisconsin Public Radio year-end membership drive. Veronica Rickard here with Cheryl Gasser, of course, Gene Purcell. Your support is vital to all of the programs you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio, and that's why we're here now to ask for your gift as 2014 comes to an end, and we look forward to starting 2015 strong. Make the programs you rely on possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we still have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now as we near the end of the hour from a pair of anonymous donors in Middleton, and that means your gift of $50 turns into $100. And your gift of $100 turns into $200. So take advantage of this match. We don't want to leave any of this money on the table. Support Wisconsin Public Radio programs like Central Time that you enjoy when you pledge. Right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And there's another great reason, Gene, to make a pledge right now.
There sure is. If you donate any amount right now, you'll be automatically entered to win two tickets on a WPR trip. You'd get to choose, of course. You could go to Washington, D.C., enjoy a trip to France, or check out Alaska. So, two things. You could double your gift right now, and you could get entered into that drawing at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Now, in the last segment, we learned about Badger football coach Gary Anderson's surprising departure after just 2 years on the job. This is an example of the timely, Wisconsin-focused conversations we have here on Central Time.
Your support makes the many topics we cover every day on the show possible. Just today, we've talked about diversity in Wisconsin. We've talked about depression and treatment. We've talked about football, covered so much ground just in this show alone. Choose a gift amount that works for you that reflects all the listening you do, all the learning you do listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, and then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We know that you give to Wisconsin Public Radio to support the programs that you love, to support what you hear here on Wisconsin Public Radio. As an added incentive, we've also got something else special for you during this year-end membership drive. It's a limited edition 2015 calendar, and it's all yours when you give $120 or more. That's $10 a month.
And it is a great calendar. It's black and white photos of Wisconsin Public Radio throughout history. We're nearing our 100th anniversary. You can make your pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and ask for your WPR calendar as a thank you gift.